This is Linda Tucker roaring at you from the heart of White Lion Territories. I'm here with my producer, Barry Gargan, and it's a beautiful day, absolutely beautiful day. We heard the hyenas first thing this morning. You'll hear the crickets chirping, and we're going to pick up where we were last time with the 13 laws of lion-hearted leadership. We spoke last week about this tradition of the lions representing leadership always, or kingship. Whatever culture you come from, lions represent kingship or leadership. But last week we spoke about these two traditions, the one being Hercules and the other being Androcles. Hercules being the hero who killed the lion and was on an egotistical drive to prove himself, and it was all about self-service. Whereas Androcles was the herdsman who saved the lion, or he helped the lion who was in great need. And as a consequence, nature saved him. And that is the second tradition, all about service of the greater good. Now, these 13 laws of lion-hearted leadership originate from the Androcles tradition. And we'll go on to look at how each of these laws empower and enable us in our modern context. But before we do that, let's look at how they worked for Androcles, our lion-hearted leadership model from ancient Roman times. So this first law of origination, there's no denying that Androcles had a few precedents to follow when he took his heroic decision not to run away, but instead to venture into the cave to assist the injured lion. So it was both a spontaneous and an unexpected encounter in which he had to trust his heart and hope for the best. When he stepped into the cave, he wasn't following anyone else's footprints, as you can imagine. This was his own unique path. And of course, this is the key to the first law of origination, which we discussed and uncovered in our last session together. Follow your heart. That is your barometer. That will allow you to take your own path in life. And your heart is a barometer of pure gold. You can't go wrong if you truly follow your heart as the barometer of truth. So the second law is appreciation. And let's consider Androcles again. Appreciation is to have empathy, to have love and value of things. And of course, that's exactly what he had. If he had been hard-hearted, he would never have felt anyone else's pain, let alone the anguish of an animal and an apex predator at that. So you get the sense that he celebrated life, not death. He wasn't one of those people who liked to kill for fun. He was able to appreciate the depth of suffering, and through this deeply instinctive and emotional connectivity, he acted for the greater good. So it wasn't only his appreciation of the lion based on an innate understanding that lions are actually family and kin to us, rather than mortal enemies. But there was a sense of celebrating nature, you know, that allowed him to take that action. He was actually part of natural law, if I analyze what went on in his mind at that moment, or rather what went on in his heart. Now, some of the stories are so amazing. There seem to be eyewitnesses who actually met with Androcles after the lion saved him from death in the arena. And they described that he walked the streets of Rome side by side with this lion, and they threw roses at him. The public showered him with flowers like confetti. So there's an example again of that second law of appreciation. Not only when you appreciate life and nature, nature and your environment appreciates you back. So don't be afraid of your true feelings. They are the key to joy. This is Linda Tucker. I'm reaching out to you from the heart of White Line Territories. I'm here with my producer, Berry Gargan, and a very special guest. Joan Rankett is an animal communicator, one of the world's leading animal communicators or interspecies communicators. And as you know, this is very close to the work of the White Line Trust and my training over 2 decades. You will recall that in our Leadership Academy, we dedicate a deep training to communicating across what is known as the species barrier. It isn't, in fact, a barrier at all when you work with the principles of the heart. And that's part of what I'm going to be exploring with Joan. It's a great pleasure to have you here with us, Joan.
Well, welcome. Thank you. I feel very, very, very honored to be here and surrounded by this magical place, and the energy, even from the plants sitting out here, just feels delicious.
And this is amazing. We've just had a cloudburst, much needed storm after more than a year of drought. And everything's come out since then.
Yeah, it feels very alive, and I feel like we're enveloped in it right now.
Fantastic. Let me give you a little more background on Joan. This is really pioneering work, and of course, at one level, it shouldn't be. It's really a return to a way of living in communion with nature that should always have been our contract with creation. And Joan, in this work, has published 2 groundbreaking books. The one is Communication with All Life, Revelation of an Animal Communicator, and the publisher there is Hay House, in the year 2007, quite some time ago. So I hope you're aware of this important book. I was also a Hay House publisher, and my book Mystery of the White Lines was republished for the third time by Hay House in the year 2010. So we share Hay House as a publisher. And since then, an incredibly important book, Energy Healing for Animals, and this is the publisher called Sounds True. Really important. The content of this book and the publisher reminding us that the whole system is an energy system, and it's not only about our healing. I'm really looking forward to talking with Joan. Maybe if we start with your most recent book, Energy Healing for Animals, Joan, tell us a little more about that.
Well, in that book, I talk a lot about the morphic resonance of a household and how our entire household has its own intelligence, if you will, an emotional code and kind of imprint on the universe when we're in harmony. And it does also when we are not in harmony, when we have a dissonance. So when, by being an emotional leader in our own home, we have the ability to connect with our animals on a really profound level that is kind of beyond communication per se, into a real communing sense. But we're borrowing that in our household truly from nature, because the way that animals are in the wild, I go through a little bit about, you know, what their emotional life is in the wild and how we really need to recognize who they are in our homes and not kind of expecting them to be a projection of us or a projection of our emotional system, but really looking at who they are and how we can all be together. And then I go through the animal chakras, the meridians, the emotionals, connection to each of the organs. And then I go into different modalities and techniques and vibrations and ways that we can heal our own animals or looking at how we could get help.
And I loved the way you described communication at a deeper level, really being communion. Can you talk a little more about that?
Yeah, I have a program for people to become animal communicators, and I always say that, you know, I'm going to teach you animal communication so that eventually you unlearn it and just get into a zone. And I think that that's one of the best things about being out with wildlife is It doesn't have to be a conversation about what you're doing on Thursday. You know, it doesn't have to be the same reality that we live in our kind of city culture, so to speak. And that it really is more of that sense of, I feel this, you know, I feel this is off over here. So I'm just going to give my energy to raising the vibration, or maybe this animal is raising, you know, maybe my cat is raising my vibration because she sees I'm sad, right? So that we're just in this total moving energy system and not necessarily breaking it down by words. And we just are very, very conscious of each other, and yet it's just a state of being.
So yeah, that is so important when one really looks at communication, because people can talk, and there can be no real heart-to-heart connection at all.
Yeah, absolutely. Then it just becomes an extension of what we're already suffering from to begin with the way that our communication is broken down on the universe.
Right, and I think that's so important for people to realize, you know, words and the way we communicate can be broken down rather than really bridge building, which is the true heart-to-heart, yes, soul-to-soul connection that you work with.
Yeah, and that to me is, I feel like if households were that, if people experienced that even just in their household, then they would accidentally broaden it out into the universe, right?
So that's a very kind way of introducing people to a much vaster connection with nature. If they can get it right in their households, they can apply the same principle to being aware that we have to help restore our planet.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it is... All right, I'm going to say this. There are a lot of people that go out and I'm saying this in air quotes, rescue an animal, and they leave it, that animal, in the same sort of like, oh, he's a rescue, say. Mm. And I'm using this as an example. Mm. And if they're not seeing that as another fellow being that is their equal and lovely and amazing co-facilitator in their household, so to speak, then there's always going to be a deficit, there's always going to be a victim, there's always going to be something going on that isn't whole. Mm-hmm. But if you bring someone in, you go to the shelter, and you pick out that someone who's maybe had a rough past and said, okay, that's behind us, let's go, then you're not dragging that story along, and you're creating a whole new world. I kind of call it making it, you know, doing a brand new day. Creating that brand new day today. So when people experience that feeling, that sense where we don't have to bring all this stuff with us, I can really make this an outstanding place for this other being to be with me in my household, we've already done that thing with nature, right? We started with one little being. We might then move out to our garden, and then we might move into our workplace, and then we might move into community. So I think that it you know, even our animals at home can be seen as connecting with nature on that grand scale, and that we have some work to do. And then these little guys can become our partners. I think of my animals at my house as my ground crew.
Isn't that wonderful? Ground crew. And it's collaborative.
Yeah.
You know, there's in your model, in understanding the energetics of how these things work, it's not patronizing. You don't talk down to them. It's a ground crew. You all, you know.
We're all on board.
That is so wonderful. And that is how an ecosystem works in the larger scheme of things. You know, it doesn't matter if you, the king at the tip of the pyramid of the food chain, or if you're a termite at the so-called bottom of the food chain, you're equally important to the health of the system. You are equally important. You just play a different role.
Exactly. And one of my dogs is the heart of the household, which doesn't look as smart as the border collie, but it's equally brilliant, right? We need the heart, and we need the manager.
And I love the way that you describe, you know, humans tend to impose victimhood on animals, whereas the amazing, amazing thing about nature and animals in general is they can self-heal. They can
absolutely
let their baggage go and live in the present, enjoy, if you allow them that.
If you're setting up, like, poof, here we go, let's just go with this. So what you've created here, you're setting up you're facilitating, or you've allowed this place to just be its own place, where you're, in what I would call in a household, the emotional leader, but everybody has the ability to be who they are and what they are and what they need to be, and everybody's able to see what they need from each other without you micromanaging.
It's lovely to have this perspective, because that's essentially what we're hoping to achieve in this project.
I feel it so much. I mean, it just makes me want to cry, because you can say, sometimes you can hear words and say, oh yeah, that's cool. But when I hear what you're saying about the eco, just the whole structure here, I mean, I feel it to my core.
And you are an energy, you work at a core level with energy. So I trust what you feel.
Yeah.
You know, many people feel things and they override their hearts as a true barometer. So you work with heart consciousness constantly as your barometer.
Yeah, absolutely. And this place has that. I mean, that is, I think, what I will go home with. That and the picture of those two beauties this morning, the two lions.
Describe what you saw this morning.
This morning was spectacular. So I'm afraid I'm going to say, so it's Nebu and I can't
Zyra.
Say her name.
Zyra. Zyra, the mother, the queen of these, of her territory.
Oh, God. So this morning we drove up, and we have been doing early morning game drives. We've been lucky enough to go out. And the sky was threatening. It was just really this almost like mythical potential storm, which of course, on the one hand, you're saying to yourself, I want to see the lions. But on the other hand, I know that also is so magical to be part of, like, rain in Africa, because I actually had been praying for that with the group yesterday.
Oh.
And a number of other people.
Thank you.
I actually put it out to about 25,000 people.
Wow! And the rain clouds gathered.
Yeah. So anyway, this
morning, let us just pause a second there. Do not forget how powerful you are in humility when you align with the great forces like that. Just what Joan did there in putting it out to so many people, a prayer for the health of the ecosystem, which has been in drought for so long.
Yeah.
Thank you, Joan.
Oh, you're welcome. It was really great to drive back in the rain. But before that, there was a moment, almost as if the sea parted or the clouds opened up. Right before the clouds dumped, we came around the corner and Jason had said, we are very close to the lions, because he had his little lion detector out. And as we came around the corner, the two goddesses, I know that they're in lion form, but the two goddesses were sitting there truly in the Sphinx, like just looking out in all their glory. Mm-hmm. And they recognized all of us in a really moment. I mean, I spent a lot of time just bowing down. And when I did get, I feel like I wish I'd gotten even more of a glimpse, but I was worth spending the time looking down. And when I looked up again and just looked at those two, it was, that picture will be etched in my mind for the rest of my life. They were so beautiful and just in their full power. And then, like all of us, they got rained on, and so we all had to go.
Can we pause just a moment? As you know, a professional energy worker, can you speak to the concept that we uphold here in our project, where you don't go out to the lions with all sorts of modern technologies and cameras and things that snap and peep and zoom, you know, iPads and everything else? We leave all that technology behind. We unplug from that and we go out to the lions in true reverence, working with the technologies of the heart. Can you speak to that, you know, from your professional understanding?
Well, I have to say that I am always just scolding the finger at my own students, saying, you don't need to go out. I mean, I know that you should be safe if you're riding your horse and have a phone with you, but I have horses, dogs, and cats. When I'm out with my horses, I try to keep, if I need the phone for safety, it's over there. I don't take a phone on the dog walk. So as much as I'm, my hobby is photography, as much as I'd love to be out there click, click, clicking, There's no phones. There's no, nothing is taken out on the game drive. So I don't have a camera. I have nothing. I don't have any, you know, none of us have an ability to take pictures. So our pictures have to be clicked into our hearts. And we have to be fully present. We can't hide behind that lens. I mean, although at times, sometimes it's a meditation behind the lens, but I really get, I mean, I totally get it because I live this at home with the technology-free zones.
Right, so you specifically go into technology-free zones to restore yourself, I can imagine.
Yeah, and to just, so that when I'm on a dog walk, I'm on a dog walk. When I'm with my horses, I'm with my horses. When I'm with my cats, I'm with, you know what I mean? Like, there's times when I'm totally in front of the computer enough, you know, by writing books and talking to animals and teaching online. And so for me, it's got to be a balance.
And it has to do with being totally present, totally alive and, you know, conscious and living your life to the full, as opposed to being tapped into a virtual reality that is actually draining our life force.
Yes. And I mean, it's, and especially because I always live out in the wilderness. So it's like, I've got to keep my eye on coyotes. I've got to keep my eye on the things around so that I'm keeping my animals safe. So that we're a safe unit, but I just like to be aware so that because we love the coyotes, but we've got to be in reverence with the wildlife that we have at our place.
Right, absolutely. And so, you know, as you say, you work with technologies all the time. Mm-hmm. You have worked in a Hollywood context. You've promoted your book effectively. You know how to work with technologies.
Exactly.
But there's a place for these things.
Absolutely. And there's it's, for me, it's kind of fun to step away and be in my own world and then come back to, say, social media, and it's its own life force. It's like, okay, that's fun to tap into, but it's really great to just step away and be in.
So if we go to your groundbreaking book in 2007, Communication with All Life. Now, isn't that amazing that one has to say with all life? It shows how restricted our communication normally is, you know, between humans, and even then at a very, you know, a non-communicative level between humans. So it's a very powerful title, making it clear that there is such a thing as reaching out across all these so-called barriers between species, races, tribes, colors, genders, wherever. And so I'm fascinated to hear more about that and the way that you describe the word revelation of an animal communicator. Can you tell us a little more about that?
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny because when I was really young, some of my first memories of communication were with plants and trees. And so I like to point out that animal communication is not a gift, but it's remembering, and then from there creating a skill set, right? Like telepathy to me is a muscle, and so you rebuild that muscle. And so in the book I tell stories about, you know, how I got started so that people can really see that it's easy to look at someone and say, oh, well, they have the gift, I can never do it. To me, it's something we all do. We all just have to be reminded of how simple it is, and to be in that reverent state, and to be able to really quiet your mind, which is another reason why I love to get away from technology, and I love to tell my students, get away from Dr. Google, right? Mm. Like, you don't need to research and look everything up. So the first book is really about my creating this whole, getting started as an animal communicator, and then really the second half of the book, and lots of stories about animal communication, fun stories about how it helped people and animals. And then the second part is how other people can do it, and bringing animals into your energy field, or doing heart-to-heart telepathic exercise, things like that, so that people remember that we all do this.
So here's a question. You know that when I asked Maria Cosa how she walked through that angry pride of lions that night, 24 mm-hmm. lions who'd surrounded my vehicle, and they appeared to be intent on devouring us, and she calmed them and she walked straight through them. And I asked her how she did that, and she said, there are only two golden rules in your relationship with nature. It's love and reverence. And when you apply those two rules, you are totally connected and will not be harmed. So I was listening to your description of how we reconnect with our communication with nature, and it seems that those two golden rules are inherent in it.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, you absolutely have to be in a state of reverence, and you know, if you're going to have ego walking into an animal communication session, you're going to automatically have an agenda, and your energy alone is going to push away either the animal, or the person's going to have a little meter saying, "This isn't sitting true with me." So, you know, you have to have reverence for the animal and the person sitting there, and you know, complete respect for the work.
And you also described it as a heart to heart. So it's that combination of love and reverence.
Yes.
And if we can reclaim that, why is it so difficult? That's how we should be in relation to creation, this wonder world of gifting that comes to us from nature. Why is it so difficult for people to feel reverence?
Well, I think that there's a couple of things. I think that when we have fear, we have to automatically take over, right? We have to step in and be like, ooh, I've got this. And I look at so the first day we were here and we got to meet The two boys, the two big men now.
So, yeah, so they did communicate with us at some point and said, we don't like being boys anymore.
I know, I just had to cut myself.
And they were busy communicating with you then. That was, we like being called princes. But I got the communication with them recently. We are now kings.
Yeah.
So,
and that's funny, I cut, I was like, the two,
Zucara and Matsuyeng.
And they're so stunning. And the thing that that struck me the most was, first of all, they were just completely available. And the minute that when we pulled up in the Jeep, they were available. We had the blinky bowing, absolute.
What we call the slow cat blink. I'm sure you can do that with your domestic cats.
Oh, I do it all the time. I do it with horses and I do it with dogs.
And they do the slow.
Yeah,
the slow
I've
blink.
I've always done that blink, so it was so fun that it was you do it with big cats. I've actually done it when I've worked with animals in the zoo. I've actually done it with orangutans. I've done it with. I do that, and I'll be very aware of, anyway, I'm just very aware of, and if you think of it energetically, not only is it a recognition and a bow and a reverence, but it's also a physical way of pulling your energy in, so even if you're excited or nervous, you've got a way of just saying, okay, I'm going to gather myself now. So I love that
interesting
sense of the bowing. So those two princes were sitting there in their full glory, and we had been there for a little bit, and it appeared that, was it Zucara that was on the other side of the wire, or was it Matsuyeng?
Oh, yes. So Zucara is known in this part of the world as Houdini, because he is not daunted by an electric wire, and just to contextualize for our listeners, you know, there is this vast a wilderness area that we've managed to secure for the white lions, but unfortunately, on its borders, it is fenced in to protect them from poaching and hunters. And so on our distant borders, you do get electric fences, and you also get a warning fence that has a few electric strands to warn the lions not to come to the perimeter fence. But now this particular great lion, and he knows he's a prince and fast becoming a king.
Yeah, he's a king.
He, you know, if he so chooses, will deal with the electric fence and actually, you know, hurl himself through, take the charge, if he feels there's benefits, and it might be that there's an impala on the other side, and he'll go straight through. So that's how you found him.
Yeah. So we didn't realize it at first. You might have seen it, or Jason might have seen it, but. What was so beautiful about that day was when you led the meditation, I think Matsuyeng was still sitting. No, Zucara was still sitting up, but Matsuyeng was already and I'm probably saying his name wrong.
No,
but
great.
He was already ready. He knew what was coming, so he was already ready to flop down and just enjoy your meditation. And then I remember closing my eyes, and then I just had to sneak a little peek. And I do it with all the greats, right? I've done this with John of God also. But I had to sneak a little peek, and I saw Zucara go, okay, I'm going down too. So there were two just flat-out sleeping lions through a meditation. We're all in this meditation. And just as you brought us back to being in our, you know, present moment with each other in real time, after a beautiful meditation, by the way, the cats kind of slowly sat up as we all opened our eyes and moved our fingers and toes. So it was really, for one thing, that's an amazing, I mean, who gets to do that, right? Like, that's just off the charts.
To meditate
with
the king
cats.
Of the kings.
Exactly, the kings.
In their heartland, their heartland wilderness.
And so then once it was recognized that Zucara was on the other side, Jason, your partner, went and opened the gate, and he just casually walked around and then walked right by us and then went and flopped down next to his king brother. So that to me was extraordinary. And so going back to what you were saying is like, why don't people revere that? I think that Hollywood has done no favors in creating a certain amount of fear with animals. And so I don't think anybody expects to be able to sit with two kings that are so benevolent. I don't think anybody expects to... The levels of fear that we have if we can't control something just come up. And one of the things I talk about in Energy Healing for Animals is that when you don't have to put a word on it, but when we've got a certain amount of fear or anxiety, especially with the animal kingdom, there's a it comes off as sharp edges, right? And so animals are going to pick up on that. Mm. So when we're not in that love, we're not going to have that harmony. Mm. And they're, because they don't know what else to do or be, because they know that's not good. So there are giant barometers for the fact that we haven't been able to manage that sense of love. Mm. And I just have this vision that if we all managed it, could you imagine walking down the street with your lion friends?
Well, you know, these things are possible if we truly restore that contract with nature, which is love and reverence.
Right.
And it's you are so right that it's our different form of fears that separate us from that experience, that make us want to control our lives and not respect the fact that they are beyond our control ultimately, that there's a higher authority that guides through nature.
Absolutely.
So it's so fascinating, but I think, you know, it's important just that we put on record right here and now that our project attempts in every step we take to reconcile science with sacred science. And we regard the work that you do, Joan, and that our pioneering animal communicators like Winter Wersthorn and Angela Newman, the work that our animal communicators do is sacred science. So we bring sacred science together with science and realize they should never have been separated.
Right.
So, for instance, our lion ecologist, Jason, who you mentioned, you know, before he takes any important steps with the lions, such as releasing them into a new territory where they have to, you know, take territorial control of it and encounter other lions, he will always work with animal communicators to ensure that the message has been shared, that we understand where the lions are in the way that they feel about this action we're taking.
Which is so fantastic.
We don't take any step without consulting our animal communicators.
Yeah. And I mean, and you can tell because they're so, they're just communicating on that very deep level. They have that love. They're willing to give that love. They're willing to share that.
Do you get a sense of huge trust with all the animals in our project?
It's ridiculous. It's so huge. You know, I talk about this a lot with in the second book, Energy Healing for Animals. I use this as an example. If you were to watch a dog in the Best in Show class in Westminster Dog Show, right? Like a dog that makes it to the Best in Show has won a bunch of dog shows. So that moment that it gets to the Best in Show, it's had so many wins in its energy field that if you were to line them up, it would be really hard to pick which dog was the best because they've all been so successful. They have that many wins in their energy field. And so what I feel like here, so I talk to people about, like, when you've been an animal communicator or a healer, you have that many kind of winning experiences or successes or profound experiences that you walk in, and that creates that healer, that thing we trust, right? So when you look at your friends here, the lions, there is in their energy field is such a win with trust. They've got so it's complete. There aren't any holes in it. There aren't any questions about it. There aren't any, it's just like, it's almost, it's not a wall, but it's almost like, does that make any sense? It's this huge.
It's so intact.
Exactly. Yeah. It's so intact. And it so fills their auric field that it's, of course I'm going to meet with you and this is going to be delicious.
So what Joan is describing is this incredible sense of communion, to use your
communion,
word.
Communion, better, more yeah. than communication.
Yes, well, that was your explanation of the difference between human efforts to talk as opposed to that deep heart-to-heart communion that we have with our animals in this project. And these are wild animals, but they are very ready to engage in a loving and reverential way with us.
In an unbelievable way. Even more than I thought they would. Because I've been doing a bit of wildlife communion for about 7 years now. I mean, I did it before, obviously, but taking people into these kind of experiences. Mm. And some in sanctuaries, but mostly with the dolphins down in Bimini. And so... Mm. I've had a lot of those dolphins are a little more feral, so to speak, than your. I mean, I feel like, again, I don't have to have a broken down conversation with the animals in my home. We have a resonance, and I feel the resonance here and feel welcomed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you've had the most amazing experiences because. Not only the lions in our project, I mean, because we honor every creature in this ecosystem, but by extension, all the animals in the ecosystem. And you went to the Kruger National Park yesterday, which is a brief drive from our borders, and the animals came out to commune with you.
They communed with us like I've never seen. So we started out, we got to the park and... got signed in, and we did a meditation and thanked all the animals in advance for saying hello to us, and didn't have to have some intense communication, but wanted to commune. And we were blessed with elephants, hyenas, a leopard in a tree.
And
rhino
that are under such siege, they came forward to get a blessing from
several,
the group and to give a blessing.
Yeah, give us a blessing for sure.
Amazing.
And elephants, giraffe. I mean, we saw became funny. We were like, we'd like a hippo in 3 minutes. Mm. And in 3 minutes, oh, there's a hippo.
Just an incredible sense of reaching out across a divide that actually isn't there after all.
And that's that feeling of that. If we could collapse that fear, then we would see there isn't that divide.
Well, it's been such a pleasure having you with us because
it
is so close to the heart of the work that we do here. And I'm looking forward to working together in whatever capacity.
I would love that. Yeah.
And meeting up in LA because that's your new home and it's actually your old stamping ground as well.
Correct.
Stamping ground. So there's a lot of work to be done, very exciting work.
Yes.
And really, this kind of work is joy rather than work, isn't it?
I don't think it's work. I feel like it's just a parade of joy.
Joan, thank you so much. Today, just to share with our readers, you heading off to one of our Star Lion centers. And there, this is actually the youngest of all our Star Lion centers, starting from 2-year-olds up, some of them orphaned. But these are not victims at all. These are little children who, like those animals you describe from a rescue center, see themselves as little lions who
yes.
are, you know, self-determining, who are inspired by the lion as a symbol, who, you know, have an identity, who have a purpose, and they might not have means at all. In fact, they don't have means, but they have heart. And I can't wait for you to see what the lions do for the people in this part of the world.
There's a house built out of stone, wooden floors, walls, and windowsills, tables. tables and chairs worn by all of the dust. This is a place where I don't feel alone. This is a place where I feel at home. By the cracks of his skin, I climb to the dawn. I climb the tree to see the world. When the gods came around to blow me down, held on as tightly as you held.
You have been listening to One United Roar for Lions and all of nature. You're now invited to join hearts and voices with the lions and all that they stand for. To roar your truth, to be a voice and a force for nature in the choices that you make every day and the way in which you live, think and speak. Lionhearted Leadership and Dream Vision 7 Radio unite with you in One United Roar. Join us again next week for another heart-opening experience.